It doesn't mean they're angels. It just means that it takes something else to get them out of their box, to shake up their moral equilibrium. Others, you can trigger it like that. They're Yetzirah brand. It's a matzah bakery and not for matzah, for chametz. Alter Rebbe says, Kiyena Yetzir Shavu b'chol nefesh, because let's get this straight. The evil impulse is not the same in everyone. Yes, one person's nature may be of one form, and another is of another form. One may be more passionate, one less. One may be struggling in this area, struggling in another area. Let's explain elsewhere. Look at the Torah of Ayikud. Alter Rebbe discusses the various animals that were brought to the Beis Hamikdash as an offering, whether it was a bull, or it was a sheep, or it was goats. And Alter Rebbe explains that the offerings represent the offerings that we have to offer to Hashem from our animal soul. And people have different types of animal souls. Some people have bulls, and some people have sheep, and some people have goats. And it's different qualities. The bull gores. The sheep likes to enjoy itself. The goat is stubborn. It's different struggles that different people have with the Yetzirah. Now, here you might ask a question. If this is really the case, if the fact is that the misdeeds of the kalsha b'kalam of the light-headed human being are indeed attributable to his environment and to his passionate yetzahara, why does he deserve this derogatory term of kalsha b'kalam? So the Alter Rebbe right away adds, don't make a mistake. V'hine be'emes, now in truth, gam mishu mechuma miyoid betivoi, even somebody who is extremely passionate by nature, uparnaso soili yois miyoish v'kronos kolayoim, and whose livelihood compels him, it forces him to sit all day at the street corners, Ein loishu misnatzlu sal chatov. He has no excuse whatsoever for his sins. Umikri rosh gamur al asherein pachad alakim leneged einav. And thus he can be termed a rosh gamur, a complete rosh, for not having the awe, the fear of Hashem before his eyes. Because despite the fact that he hangs out in immodest places, he hangs out in places where he may sometimes encounter something immodest, and despite the fact that his Yetzer Hara's evil inclination is so vibrant, it's so alive, it's so well, that his temptations are so deep that it seems almost impossible for him to control himself. Zagdal Terebbe, despite all this, ki ha yoloi lisapik, he could have and he should have controlled himself. The lim shaylal ruach ta'avasei shebeliboi, and he could have become a leader and restrained the feeling of desire, of craving in his heart, mipnei pachad Hashem haraya kol maisav, as a result of the awe, the fear of Hashem, who sees all of his actions. Commission is boyer liel, as we explained earlier in chapter 12. Ki amo yach shalit al alev betel dosoi, that the mind rules the heart. The mind has supremacy over the heart by nature of one's birth. Man's inborn characteristic is that his mind is able to master and control his heart's desires, maybe not to restrain them from experiencing the desires, but certainly from implementing it. And since this person did not use his mind and his conviction and his will to control his temptations, but he rather implemented them in his behavior, we call him a rasha, we call him the weak human being who has done something evil, who has behaved immorally, who has done something wrong, and he is responsible for it. So the Alter Rebbe, it makes an important clarification. When you read the beginning of this chapter of Tanya, you could think that what the Alter Rebbe is saying is, we cannot judge any human being and we cannot call anybody guilty. We cannot say that anybody is a Rasha. And say that this person is guilty for his or her actions. Why? Because the reason he did something immoral is not his fault. It's because of other people. It's because of the environment. It's because of his genetic makeup. It's because of his inner composition. It's because of his outer composition. It's because of his career. Because of his parents. He's not guilty. Go rectify the environment. Don't blame him. Don't accuse him. Comes the Alter Rebbe and says, no, Yiddishkeit doesn't say that. Yiddishkeit says that generally speaking, there are exceptions, but generally speaking, a human being is responsible for his actions because he chose them. A human being ultimately has a choice to behave in an immoral way or to not behave in an immoral way. And when he does behave in an immoral way, he chose to be weak. Why? Because you have a mind and you have a will. And Hashem created a human being that even if you have the most powerful, burning desires and cravings and instincts and urges that seem so demonic, it seems that the devil in you is literally titanic and it wants to take you over totally, comes the Alter Rebbe and says, Moyach Shalit al Alev. If you want, you can turn to your craving and say, no, I understand you, I identify where you're coming from, I am not going to say that you don't exist. You do exist, but you are not in control of my behavior. Your will can turn to your heart and can tell you who you really are and where you really belong. And as a result of that, you may experience the craving, but ultimately it's expelled from your behavior. And whoever tried it, knows that it works. It's difficult, but it always works. There is no situation. If the mind, if the will and the mood and the instinct, if the will and the heart are battling with each other, are wrestling with each other, your will, your conviction as a result of your mind will always be victorious over the natural instinct and craving and urge. Your conviction of what is right and you will to implement it in the behavior will overwhelm the natural instinctive responses and emotions that you have. And that's why we call this person a Kal Shebekalim, a light-headed human being. Because he chose to surrender his soul. He chose to sell his soul. But the Alter Rebbe adds, this is true, but now let's go to the other side of things. V'hi nebe emes, but the truth is that he milcho mogdoi lovatsuma. It is a tremendous and awesome struggle. To break one's negative nature that is burning like a fiery flame. Why? Mipnei pachad Hashem. You want him to break it because of the fear of Hashem. Ukimoy nisayin mamash. It's mamash like a real test. The Alter Rebbe is telling us, let's understand something. And here we see the Alter Rebbe's sensitivity ultimately. He says, don't forget, for somebody who has a Yetzirah that burns like a baker's fiery oven, ke'esh lahava, for him to break the Yetzirah, and why is he breaking it? He's not breaking it because of a immediate, conspicuous benefit that he's going to gain from it. You want him to break it mipnei pachad Hashem, because of awe of Hashem. Hashem he doesn't see. Hashem, he doesn't feel now. Hashem, he doesn't experience now. What does he experience? He experiences a beastly urge. That's what he experiences. And you want that as a result of his reflection of what is real and what is true and who he really is and where he wants to be and his innate soul and his connection with Hashem and what godliness and so on and so forth, as a result of that, he should break this immediate, powerful, burning temptation. It's a major struggle. It's a major war. And here we have to explain what Alter Rebbe means. There is a certain stage in temptations where if you allow the temptation to blossom and to build itself up in your heart, there is a certain point where there is no returning. Everybody knows it from their personal life. Once your urge hits a certain zenith, if you allow it to build momentum and you allow it to become bigger and bigger, there's a certain point where your mind becomes so buried in the depth of your temptations. The temptations bury your mind and your philosophy so deeply that really it's too late. There's no turning back. Mayach Shalat al Alev refers to the beginning stages. When the temptation begins to grow, when the temptation begins to take hold of you, at that moment, before it took over your entire mind and heart and soul, you have the ability with your mind to produce a conviction and a will and turn to the craving and say, no, no, no. But it's a big war. It's a big war. The Chayvus HaLevavus, Rabbeinu Bechaya Ibn Pekuda, describes in his Duties of the Heart the story about a Chacham Gadol, about a great sage, who went to greet a king when he was coming back from a very big battle. A tremendous battle that he fought against his enemies. And he came back from the battle, he was victorious, he triumphed. And he returned to the palace from this tremendous war. And this great sage came out to greet the king, and he welcomed him back to the city. He said, Adoni HaMelech, my master, the king, I want to welcome you back from the small battle, and I welcome you now, I invite you now to enter into the big battle. So the king looks at him and he says, what are you talking about? You're welcoming my return from the small battle to the big battle? That was the most tremendous battle you can imagine. So he said, no, that was a small battle. Now you begin the big battle. The battle within your own heart. The battle within your own psyche, within your own heart. Within your own soul. And this is what Alter Rebbe is acknowledging here. And it's very powerful. It's very comforting. That it's Melchama G'dayla V'atzuma. It's a tremendous, tremendous war. It's a tremendous struggle. The things that some people go through in their heart. Not everybody. Not everybody. And that's what Alter Rebbe is telling us. Just because you don't experience it, you must understand that other people experience battles that you can't imagine. The struggles in people, the fluctuations, the trials, the tribulations, the ups and the downs, the moments of light in contrast of the moments of darkness, the demons, the ugly passions, the beastly cravings, the abominable urges, and the repulsive instincts. These are a genuine part of many a composition of members of God's human race. And he compares it to Nisoyan Mamish, which means it's not just difficult. It's like those major historical Nisoyanist tests that we talk about, where Hashem tested people with major obstacles to see if they could still retain their dignity and their spirituality and their depth and their humanity and their confidence in spite of the major obstacles and challenges and pain that they experience. So the Alter Rebbe comes and tells us three words. That this person every day of his life is experiencing a Nisoyan Mamish. A major, major test. And therefore, at this point in the chapter, we immediately understand the first point that Alter Rebbe wants to make. That I can never feel truly superior to another human being since I don't do what he does. I behave in a more virtuous and a more noble way than he. So Alter Rebbe says, wrong, that's not true. You're not in touch with reality. True, he may be called a Rasha in Torah standards. He may be a weak person, which is really the definition of a Rasha in Tanya, who has sinned, who chose to be weak, who chose to allow his temptations to overtake him. It's a choice, and therefore we call him Kal Shebekala. But can I feel superior to him? I don't know how I would behave if I would have been in his space and if I would have had his obstacles. Let me ask you, if you would have had his Yetzirah, if I would have had his instincts, if his temptations, his urges, am I sure that I would be better than him? How do I know? I don't have his temptations, but if I would have had his temptations and his struggles, am I sure I would be better than him? It may be that right now I am much more religious than him. But if I would have had his struggles, maybe I would have been just like him. Maybe I would have been worse than him. The fact that my behavior right now is more noble than he is does not mean that essentially I am a superior human being. I am a better human being until I will not wear his shoes, experience his experiences, and triumph over them. I cannot feel that I am superior to him. What makes me superior to him? What makes you superior to him? You don't do his sins. You don't have his struggles, for heaven's sake. Tell me one thing that makes you superior to him. You say he's a shmata, he's a lowlife, he's a rasha merusha, he's a kal shebekalim. Live his life. Triumph over what he is not triumphing, and then you say, "Huh? Look at me, I'm much better than him." The Chiddush Harim writes something powerful on the words of the Mishnah. Don't judge your friend until you reach his space. He adds three words. And you are never going to reach his space. You're never going to reach his space. So this is the first stage. This doesn't mean that person is right. It doesn't mean the person is justified. It means I can't feel superior to him. I saw a story. There's a sefer called Heichal Kotzk, the Chamber of Kotzk. There's a story there that there was a small city in which there lived a Kotzker Chassid, a follower of the Kotzker Rebbe, of Menachem Mendel Morgenstern. His name was Reb Pincha. That's what they called him, Reb Pincha. I don't know what his real name was, Reb Pinchas. But they called him Reb Pincha. In any case, in that city there was a child who was an orphan. And every day this child would go to the tzedakah box in the shul, in the Beis Medrash. People, poor people, rich people would put in their charity into that box before davening, after davening. And he would steal everyday money from the tzedakah pushk. One day they finally catch the thief. And they begin hitting this child as though he was a wall. Hitting him. They want to expel him from the city. They want to chase him out of the community. They're screaming at the child how despicable a human being he is. And the Rosh HaKol, the head of the community, the head of the council that led the community, was shouting and thundering at him. This child happened to be lame, Nebuchadnorphan. He was also slow. He was underdeveloped. So he remained frozen in his place as they were screaming at him. He was underdeveloped. He was slow. He just remained numb and frozen. He couldn't move. Reb Pincha, the Kotzke Chassid, comes into shul. He sees what's going on. He comes over to the Rosh HaKol. He comes over to the leader of the community. He turns to him and he says, "Let me ask you a question. Have you been an orphan when you were a child? Did you grow up with parents or without parents?" The leader of the community did not answer. He didn't respond. He turns to him further. He says, "Reb Yid, leader of our community, have you ever been lame?" He doesn't answer. "Have you ever walked the streets hungry? Have you ever walked the streets for days without food?" He doesn't answer. "Have you ever hung out in the streets homeless? You didn't have a roof. You didn't have a home." He doesn't answer. So he says, "You don't answer because you haven't experienced these things. So tell me, how do you have the audacity to scream at this child?" And he saved the child from the hands of these people. That's the story. Now let's try to understand the story for a moment. What was Reb Pincha trying to say? Was Reb Pincha trying to say that every thief has frustrations? Every thief has had some elements of abuse, or at least not every, but many thieves, and therefore we should allow the thief to steal. The child is stealing. Let us allow him to steal, because we have to have compassion and we have to understand where he's coming from. Every thief, many thieves, you could say this thief had an abused childhood. This thief is angry at his mother. This thief is angry at his mother-in-law. This thief lost money in the stock market. This thief got embarrassed this morning. And therefore, don't blame him. He's frustrated. He had a hard life. He had a hard day. Let him steal. That's not what Reb Pinchas is saying. In fact, it's opposite the blueprint of Torah. Torah says it's wrong what he has done. If this is a person who is normal, who is sane, who is in control, it's wrong and the person ought to be rebuked. Reb Pinchas didn't disagree with that. But what bothered him? What they were doing demonstrated that they felt superior to the child. We are good people. And here is a despicable human being who is so inferior to us. Not just a human being who is doing something wrong. That's fine. You say as follows. This person is doing something wrong. I did not do this wrong thing. This person did something wrong. We're not talking about that. Reb Pinchas is saying the first thing is don't feel superior. Feel a little bit equal to him. You're not better than him. You're not more valuable than him. You don't steal. And that's why you're much more valuable than him. Of course you don't steal. You're not an orphan. You're not lame. You're not underdeveloped. You're not homeless. You're not hungry. You're not thirsty. And if you would have these characteristics in your life, what would have you turned out to be? You don't know. Maybe like this. Maybe worse. Maybe better. When you view yourself from this perspective, now go talk to the orphan about his thievery. You will talk to him in a different way. You actually won't look down at him and feel that you're superior. You will look down at his behavior. You will look down at his behavior and not only that, in certain situations, a child may be different, but in certain situations, you can blame the person for that behavior. And not only that, you can know the truth that there is something wrong in that person's behavior. And not only that, that person may be called a Rosh HaGomer. They allowed the evil within them to take over their lives. And you have to be honest about it. But am I superior to them? No. Yet, this doesn't make me more humble than them. This says that I am not better. I may be equal. Why do I have to be humble in this person's presence? That Alter Rebbe is going to discuss at the end of the chapter. So here we have the ultimate point. I see some of you are confused with this. The Alter Rebbe is not saying that he's not a Rasha. If a person consciously does something willingly wrong, and he had the ability to control himself, and everybody has the ability to control themselves, he is defined as a Rasha. Like he discussed in chapter 1, if you commit a violation in Torah clearly, and you don't do tshuva, you are a Rasha, you're disqualified to serve as a witness. We discussed this in chapter 1. And sometimes the proper path has to be that I have to move away from this person. Sometimes I have to rebuke this person. Sometimes I have to stay away from this person. Sometimes this human being has to be punished. Of course. The question is, do I feel superior to him? So if I look at his externality, yes. If I look at his behavior versus my behavior, of course I feel superior. But the Alter Rebbe says, take a look a little bit deeper. You have to see that there is a complete context in which this person's behavior plays itself out. There are so many circumstances that characterize his life. There is an environment. There is a personality. There are certain impulses. There are certain passions. There are so many myriads of factors that have contributed to mold this human being and make him what he is today. So many factors that don't exist and may have never existed in my life. Don't look how much good I do versus how much good he does. That is not a statement about my value. That is a statement about my behavior. Maybe I'm lucky and I'm not exposed to what he is. Even if I am exposed, maybe I'm not so passionate. So I happen to be lucky that I'm in different circumstances. But if I internalize the truth of what he is exposed to, how can I feel superior because of my behavior? Fine, but inherently am I a better person? Maybe I'm behaving not like him because of reasons that are not even connected to my choice. And if I would have had those struggles that he had, I wouldn't have been better. So you're asking a simple question. You're asking, I worked on myself, so I deserve credit. He didn't work on himself. But one second. Here is the same thing. First of all, you don't know if he works on himself. Maybe he also worked on himself just like you work on yourself. It's just that what for me is very easy is for him very difficult. And the type of work that I have to do on myself is not the type of work he has to do on himself to abstain from this behavior. But furthermore, maybe the fact that he's not working on himself is because of the nature of the struggle that he has, the nature of that he has, the nature of the resistance that he has, and I don't have that resistance. So it's very good that I'm working on myself and I have to work on myself more, but could I really feel superior to him? Why is this such a foundational point in Tanya? The reason is because one of the main points of Tanya is that you have to relate to a person not in an external way only, but you have to view a person in an all-encompassing and comprehensive way. Not only viewing his behavior, but viewing the totality of his being. What is the entire difference between a Beinoni and a Tzaddik in Tanya? If you view the behavior of a Beinoni and a Tzaddik, it's identical. They both do all the mitzvahs, and they both abstain from all the sins. The Alter Rebbe reiterated that in many chapters. So in what they're doing, they're identical. But in who they are, it's two universes. The tzaddik is one world and the beinoni is another world. In their behavior, no distinction. In their inner universe, they're so remote from each other, like east from west, like heaven from earth. So the Alter Rebbe says Yiddishkeit is an all-encompassing experience that involves the entire personality. And it's the inner dimension of the beinoni that sets him worlds apart from the tzaddik. The same is true in chapter 30. Look at the whole person. Don't just look at his behavior. Look at the soul. Look at the consciousness. Look at the circumstances. Look at the struggles. Don't justify him. Don't say, like many people say in our contemporary society, everything is permissible. Moral relativism. And even if not everything is permissible, nobody does anything evil, because behind every mean act lies a crying heart. The Alter Rebbe doesn't fall, Yiddishkeit doesn't fall for that. Behind every mean act lies a crying heart, perhaps, but behind every mean act also lies a conscious choice. A conscious choice that could have been avoided. The Alter Rebbe is not saying that he's not guilty. The Alter Rebbe is not saying there's no evil within him. The Alter Rebbe is not saying he didn't do something evil. The Alter Rebbe is just saying, look at the totality of his being, and then you cannot look at disdain down on this person. Yes, the behavior that he does, you may look at in disdain. The evil that's in him is very negative, but I can't feel superior to that. The Sfas Emes once said, it's a little bit different, but it leads us to this point. Also a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says in chapter 1, we're going from chapter 4 to chapter 2 to chapter 1, but it's interesting because it's really an evolution here. In chapter 1 in Pirkei Avos, the Alter Rebbe doesn't bring it here, but he brings it in many other places. The Mishnah says, Shimon ben Prachi says, "Ve'haveidon eskola adam lekavschus." In Mishnah Vav, you should judge every human being favorably. "Haveidon eskola adam lekavschus," which is similar to the words here, "V'haveishval ruach b'fnei kol ha'adam." So the Sfas Emes explains, "Haveidonis kol ha'adam l'kaf schus." If you want to judge every person favorably, you have to look at kol ha'adam. Kol ha'adam doesn't only mean every human being. Kol ha'adam also means the entire human being, the totality of the human being. You have to look at the totality of the human being. When you view the totality of the human being, when you see every element of his life and of his experience, then you can judge him favorably. It's much easier to understand that he's not vicious, and rather that what is motivating his behavior is a positive attribute. Perhaps he thinks he's doing the right thing, or this is the way he was brought up, or this is what he knows best, and he's not trying to be vicious. That's the first stage, which is not relevant to chapter 30. That's the stage that when you see somebody doing something, and in your opinion, or even truthfully, the person is doing something wrong, the first stage of the game is try to attribute to him positive motives. We naturally, unfortunately, attribute to people who do things that we don't like, we attribute to them negative motives. We right away feel, or many of us right away feel, this person is vicious, and because of their viciousness and their evil, they are doing this. But you don't know. As long as you don't know, the Torah encourages us. Try to attribute to them redeeming positive motives. Try to say, you know, this person thinks that this is the best way to do it, and this is the most moral, and this will have the best consequences. Maybe he's making a mistake. Maybe he doesn't know what's going on. Maybe his mind is distorted. Maybe his vision is distorted. Maybe other reasons. Maybe he's insecure. But in his mind, he's not behaving viciously. He thinks he's following his divine soul. So the Sfasemis says, it's easier when you have kol ha'adam, when you take into the picture, into the consideration, the totality of the human being. But the Alter Rebbe in chapter 30 takes it to the next step. Ve'havishvar ruach b'fnei kol ha'adam. Even if you know that the person has sinned intentionally and willingly, and therefore he is called a rosh ha'gamur. If he thought he was doing the right thing, he's not called a Rosh HaGomer. And you can't attribute to him positive motives. You cannot. He knew what he was doing. Still, the Mishnah says, don't feel arrogant in his presence. Don't feel that you're better than him. Why? Here again, I think we can apply the Sfas Emes' interpretation. The Alter Rebbe says, Bifnei kol ha'adam. Bifnei kol ha'adam. Take into consideration the totality of the person. When you take into consideration the totality of the person, not just the behavior, the yetzahara, the fire, the passion, the struggle, you understand that I may not have turned out too much better. I may have turned out worse. It's interesting, if you look in Perek Dalet, it doesn't say b'fnei kol ha'adam, it says b'fnei kol adam. But the Alter Rebbe writes, Kol Ha'adam, and the reason for that we will explain next week, God willing. And there is a very important message the Alter Rebbe is conveying to us. We will discuss that. Yeah. Why does the Alter Rebbe shift names of Hashem? Good. The Alter Rebbe says, Mikri Rasha Gomer, a person is called a complete Rasha, Alasher Ein Pachad Elohim LeNegedeinu, because there is no fear of Hashem before his eyes. So he uses the words Pachad Elohim. The next line he says, he should have controlled the craving in his heart, Mipnei Pachad Hashem, because of the awe of Hashem. Over here too, he should have said Pachad Elohim. Why does he change from Elohim to Hashem? So if you realize, when he talks about your eyes, he says, you did not have the fear of Hashem before your eyes. When he talks about the cravings in your heart, he says you didn't control the cravings in your heart because of the fear of Hashem. So there's a sefer, Likutei Levi Yitzchak, a commentary on Tanya written by the chief rabbi of the Dniepropetrovsk in Russia, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Schneerson, a great Kabbalist and sage, the father of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Passed away in 1944 on the 20th of Av in Almaty, in Kazakhstan, in Russia. After many years of being arrested and imprisoned by the communists, he wrote Likutei Levi Yitzchak. And he wrote this while he was in exile. His wife, Rebbe Tzimchana Schneerson, manufactured ink that she made specially. And with that ink, he wrote a footnotes on the Sfarim he had. He had the Tanakh and, I think, some Mishnayos and Zohar and Tanya. from memory, everything from memory, brilliant, brilliant interpretation and commentary. So this is what he writes. He asks this question, and this is what he says. It says in Kabbalah and in Chassidus that the two names of Hashem, Yudke Vavke, Hashem and Elohim, represent the inner energy and the outer energy. Like the Pasuk says in Tehillim, Shemesh Umagin Hashem Elohim. Hashem Elohim is like the sun and the shield, the seath, that encases the sun. Hashem, Yudke Vavke, is like the inner energy, and Elohim is like the garment, the external energy that covers and eclipses the inner, more intense energy and communicates it to the world. Now, the two instruments that are the facilitators of sin, the Alter Rebbe identified as the eye and the heart. The eye sees and the heart craves. But the eye is the external limb. The eye is on the outside, and the eye is exposed to the things on the outside. The eye processes the information and then sends it to the brain, and then the brain causes the inner impulse within the heart. So therefore, the Alter Rebbe says like this. When he talks about that you are not controlling your eyes, he says, Ein pachad elekim lenegedein. There's no fear of elekim before your eyes. When he talks about the fact that you laxed in controlling your heart, he says, there's no pachad Hashem that sees all of your actions. In other words, Elohim ought to inspire the eye to control itself, and Hashem ought to inspire the heart to control itself. Elohim, which is the external divine energy that relates to the more external dynamics of life, ought to inspire the eye to behave morally. And you, Hashem, ought to inspire the heart to behave morally. I will just conclude with this story, which the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson, once told. He told us in a sicha, in a talk of the year Tofresh Tzadik Ches, 1938, published in that book of talks. And he tells the story about a Jew who went in to the Alter Rebbe when the Alter Rebbe lived in Liozhna. The first time he came to visit the Alter Rebbe, and he went in on Yechidus, he went in for a private audience to the Alter Rebbe. In response to some of the questions that he asked many questions concerning his personal life and his growth and his condition and his struggles. The Alter Rebbe turned to him, and these were the Alter Rebbe's words. Vehevei shfal ruach bifnei kol ha'adam vehevei be'emes la'amitoi. Quoting the Tanya, you should be humble before every human being. You should really be in the utmost sense of the word in full sincerity. Says the previous Rebbe, the Jew left the Alter Rebbe, and he did not go back into the Alter Rebbe for 20 years. After 20 years, he came to visit him again. And the rationale for that was, he said, "Medaftos durich vidin b'chol koiches ha'nefesh." I first have to implement this and apply this in all of the attributes of my soul and in my thought and in my speech and in my action. And he felt that only after he totally fulfilled what the Alter Rebbe told him at the first audience, is he qualified to now go in a second time. You didn't finish the first homework. What are you coming to me for the next exam? So he waited 20 years until he felt that he implemented this in every fiber of his being, and then he came into the Alter Rebbe. Now this story demonstrates that it's not an easy job. It's not an easy thing that the Alter Rebbe is asking. It requires a lot of toil. But when one tries to implement it, one lives a totally a different life, and one certainly puts his ego in its place and allows his soul to emerge. Have a good night and a wonderful week.
Rabbi Jacobson delivers this weekly class on the Tanya at Heichal Menachem in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, New York. To order additional tapes or albums, please call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076.